So again, thank you all for being here tonight. It's great to see you all. So tonight we're gonna unpack the poisonous mind state that is delusion, and looking at it as a core component of suffering. And I think it's true of all of us. We all know suffering, and also explore some remedies that invite us back to our natural state of wisdom. I'll just share a quote. Benjamin Franklin reflects that the doorstep to the temple of wisdom is a knowledge of our own ignorance. I've heard it said that wisdom is not just the accumulation of knowledge, but also the shedding of ignorance. And I guess I would add, it's also that component that's the purification of delusion. So as we cultivate more wisdom, we become more aware, we lose that component that's ignorance, we become informed. And I think also we come to a place that has more clarity of view, where we can see more clearly in ways that we weren't able to before. Maybe that gives us an opportunity to look at our earlier views as being either ill-informed or simply wrong sometimes. I know, as an example of limited view for me, that's often came in the form of labeling or judgment or comparing myself in some way, that comparing mind. And then just so much, just as we learn, as we experience more in life and we learn more truths that were not earlier revealed to us. Alan Watts shares, things are as they are. Looking out into the universe at night, we make no comparison between right and wrong stars, nor between well and badly arranged constellations. It hasn't been that long since humanity, as a theme, thought that we were the center of everything, that we and the Earth were those things that all life revolved around. But in the short amount of time, in the last few hundred years, we've come to some deep insights from observation, from being able to extend a lens further and further out into the heavens. One thing that's current now, I think most all of us have probably heard of, is that understanding that not long ago, maybe within some of our lifetimes, we just thought that celestial bodies, galaxies, there was a distance, just a void. There was nothing between those galactic systems, just empty space. But we now know that dark matter and dark energy comprises most of the substance within the universe. And I think that also holds true of ourselves. It's in these unseen areas where we actively work in this practice that our greatest strengths and insights are found. So we realize that as we're looking at out into the heavens, possibly, that the distance between those bodies is separated, but is connected in ways that we're not able to sense unless we look deeper. Obviously, one of the core teachings within Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths, reminds us that there is indeed suffering in life. The same unsatisfactoriness also holds true of another area of significance within these teachings, and that's the three marks of existence that says that there's impermanence, that things arise and are sustained for a short amount of time and pass away. That there is this sense of selflessness, something that's bigger than just myself. And obviously, dukkha, the Pali meaning that unsatisfactoriness or suffering. So delusion is prevalent within so many different aspects of Buddhism and the teachings. We can easily understand that suffering is simply wanting things to be differently than they are. Pushing away or clinging. We all know that craving of that insatiable hunger that's true of all of us, I think, on some levels. Delusion, and going right into the heart of the teachings, is listed as one of the three poisons or defilements, kalesas, literally translated from the Pali meaning torments of the mind, that include greed, clinging, hatred, aversion, and delusion or ignorance in not seeing clearly. And that's essentially the second noble truth that touches on those causes, those origins of suffering. I think we've all heard fear described as false evidence appearing real. I think that's really the essence of delusion, is that we're not seeing clearly in some way. And it takes us turning a lens and looking further and looking more clearly. Marianne Williamson's reflection in Our Greatest Fear is, it's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. As we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So how do we transform our existence from one where we choose only to see from a place of separation, in preferring not to acknowledge the undeniable truth that all things arise and pass away, impermanence, and in the acceptance and appreciation of all experience, choosing not to greet it from a view that simply wishes it to be different than it is? How do we develop that wisdom? Shedding that ignorance, purifying ourselves from those torments of delusion, moving away from that fear-based existence to one where we reside in peace, love, and joy. Life is not supposed to be, doesn't have to be, deeply suffering if we can just simply change the relationship with the way that we experience life. So there are indeed antidotes to the poisons, examples, greed, hatred, delusion, greed. We bring more generosity. But even that, we can get more granular in shining that lens, in looking at the place from which we give. Is it controlling? Is it manipulative? Is it trying to validate ourselves in some way? Hatred. What is it that we're hating? Can we bring more compassion? Can we bring more loving kindness? Delusion. How do we cultivate that wisdom? How do we shed those false views and beginning to neutralize those negative impacts within our lives and within that debris field that we've left of all of that harm that we've consciously or unconsciously left. The Dhammapada describes how the poisons manifest as: there is no fire like lust, no grip like anger, and no net like delusion. It's powerful stuff, these poisons. So from the Four Noble Truths, we know that a prescription has been written for the cessation of that suffering, where there's suffering in life. It's caused from thirst, from craving, aversion, delusion, and realizing that there's a pathway to our freedom from suffering. That being that Noble Eightfold Path. Looking at the Noble Eightfold Path, it's broken into three major divisions. So there's that wisdom or discernment component that combats or neutralizes those components of delusion or ignorance in cultivating more skillful or wholesome view or understanding, and gaining a better intention. What's the place that we're coming from? Are we coming from one that's harmful? Are we coming from one that's generous? Also, the other major divisions being virtue, that those ethical components of skillful speech and livelihood, action, just how we're interacting with the world in a skillful way. And all of these things that are developed through our practice, through concentration and meditation, where we can bring more energy, mindfulness, and concentration, and peeling away some of those layers that are diluted. All of those aspects are incredibly important. And it's here that we begin to undertake the practice of doing no harm to self or others. In that, we can clearly see the relationships between the precepts, no harming, essentially, and then all of those highest qualities that embody the path that's been laid out in striving to be our best versions. We do have several talks, I think, that are planned here by myself and others that are planned to touch on the precepts and those highest qualities of the paramis. So I think those will be really good deep dives for all of us to look a little bit further, try to get down into the granular level of pointing that lens more clearly. Delusion is very tricky. There's a lot of it that's conditioned. There's a lot of it that is a false refuge. That keeps us blind to our darkest fears. Allows us to wrongly convince ourselves that we're not doing harm to ourselves or others. That we're not repeating this karmic cycle over and over again. It's just more suffering. A couple of personal examples. So I'm a baby brother of two older identical twin sisters. And one of those sisters was born with a hole in her heart. It's called Tetralogy of Fallot. So Tammy, the youngest of the two twins, had four open heart surgeries, a couple of closed, multiple valve replacements, all this stuff, right? born in 1967, the technology back then to handle a 3-pound baby with a hole in her heart was just non-existent, really. So the life expectancy for her was short, not even a teenager. But Tammy lived until she was 40. And my mom, who also died this past fall, chose, mandated herself to stay in this hole that really pushed herself to suffer. And there again, I've not lost a child, so I can only speak to this place from observation, from my mom, my lifelong best friend. Some people cannot get back up. That's understandable, gosh. But it's also, in part, disregarding the fact that you have other children that still need you to be their mom, and the world still needs you. So I think for many of us, through suffering, we fall in a hole, and we continue to mandate that place that's imprisoned, rather than turning towards it and looking it in the eye with a bow and trying maybe over and over again to get back up. Myself, personal delusion, that's, whoa, there's so many frickin' stories, I could be here all night with y'all. But those refuges of loneliness in my life and those experiences in growing up were very dysfunctional family, very abusive and mentally, physically, you name it. And also in the midst of a sick child, so just sort of off by myself, not just that deep conditioning. So taking me personally, taking refuge in things that pulled me out of loneliness, go to a bar just for companionship. What results in this? Taking refuge in alcohol or dysfunction, delusion, more confusion, more suffering, more harm to myself and other people. There's also large-scale societal infections. We don't have to look far within our country and within the world right now to realize that. We can also look back, maybe Nazi Germany, where a whole nation was captured. And thinking of one person that led innocent people into the gas chamber or possibly dropped a canister down and was completely blind, didn't see the connection of humanity from him or herself to all of those that such significant harm was being imparted. So yeah, it's infectious. It is difficult to walk through the world. We're continually inundated with delusional messaging, media. Also, the quality of relationships that we keep are good indicators of where we stand from a place of clarity or delusion. Me going to a bar many times. So one of the jewels, we're sitting in it right now, is community. Standing on the shoulders of giants. There's so many giants that we can turn to. We understand the unsatisfactoriness of delusion, one that wishes other than it as it is, that it can be transformed through a mindfulness practice, one that invites equanimity in having a sustained practice where we look at it, we push it away, And in time, we push it away less hard or hold it less tightly. We can remove that thirst, the hook that causes us to push for outcome despite the cost, that looks at the intention, beginning to alleviate those torments. We can administer some of those antidotes. During guided meditation, we were asked, what's the attitude in the mind right now? This question often illuminates whether the mind is holding on in some way or wanting some other state to occur, and is a direct application of mindfulness of mind. Often just in asking the questions, we can feel the mind relax from a clinging or aversion we hadn't even realized it's there. So practicing mindfulness just gives us the awareness of what's going on with us. We can always investigate those wholesome, unwholesome roots of the mind, of whether something's present, if it's arising, if it's absent within us. And in doing so, it becomes very clear that delusion also strengthens wrong view. Example, for most of us, we spend energy and effort gratifying the self, defending it, holding on to it, not realizing that in each new moment, there's a new life, there's a new opportunity for us to come to that place of inner being that Thich Nhat Hanh speaks of, that hidden interconnection with all life. A Zen proverb reminds us that no snowflake ever falls in the wrong place. I just want to share real quick, not getting too deep into the teachings, but within mindfulness, there's a book, Joseph Goldstein. He touches on mental factors that include the universals and the occasionals, of which there are 14 unwholesome factors of mind: greed, hatred, delusion, shamelessness, fearlessness of wrongdoing, restlessness, worry, wrong view, conceit, envy, sloth, torpor, and doubt. Of all of these unwholesome mind states, those that bring suffering to others or ourselves, four of them are always present in every unwholesome consciousness. First, delusion, shamefulness, fearlessness of wrongdoing, and restlessness. So it's incredibly important to come to a place that sees more clearly. One strategy is abandoning those unwholesome states that have arisen. We can bring in those opposites, those antidotes. For greed, bringing in generosity. Hatred, bringing in compassion and loving kindness. Delusion, cultivating more wisdom. I saw a bumper sticker recently that said, "Don't assume that I share your prejudices." So just softening some of those rigid opinions within our minds. More strategies for unwholesome states that have arisen: reflecting upon self-respect or respect for others. All of our ancestors and all of our future generations are within us. So in your hand is every ancestor, every pebble, every leaf, every butterfly, all of those energetic imprints that are within us from those that have been, or possibly within our seeds that will spring forth in children that we've brought, or just in the way that we interact with the world. Another strategy is diversion of attention. This is a little bit more aggressive, where we can't pull ourselves out of it. So we just force ourselves to shift in some way. And finally, one of the strategies that the Buddha spoke of is suppression, or what Joseph Goldstein calls a cowboy dharma, basically just shooting down these wrong views that come up, whether we're loving it in some way or throwing an atomic bomb at it. But just getting as aggressive as we need to shift ourselves away from that, what we know to be a wrong view. The key being just develop more mindfulness and bringing more insights into our world. Jimi Hendrix reflected that when the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will know peace. So just coming to that place that's more loving and trying to diminish some of those personal renderings of our realities. I was thinking of how we fine-tune our radios and being able to lock into a specific radio frequency, but also in having caution that we can easily get caught into what comes up after this commercial break, you know, that hook in some way. I know one thing that was true of me in my life, and not to say it's not still true now in some moments, looking at another from strictly the physical realm and only sexual energy being present. And that may, just that sense of interaction, negatively and reinforce what I'm viewing as an object and how she perceives herself from that sense of independent self, losing that connection, tapping into the ego, or maybe she's tapping into traumas in some way, just because I'm looking at someone as an object instead of someone that's not separated from me, someone that's real. That gives us the opportunity for more strengthening and cultivating a ethical, moral practice, developing more granular awareness. When, at one point when I first got out of school, I was working, designing some bridges and highways and being out and seeing them being constructed. Certain areas were deemed as environmentally sensitive areas, ESAs. And I would think that our minds are environmentally sensitive areas also, that we need to look more consciously at those threatened and endangered species that are wholesome and give them sanctuary where they can thrive. That's what we do in this practice. We strengthen the ecologies of our minds in something that's more balanced, something that's more clear. Coming to peace. A.J. Musty, there is no way to peace. Peace is the way. So we just forge something that is non-confrontational, non-harming. Maybe to the extreme, we don't ring the bell. We invite the bell to sound. Just look at it a little differently. We all have traumas. We've all been victimized, but we're not victims. We've all been abusive, but we're not abusers. Our true essence is beyond both what has already been healed and all that remains to be healed. We have choices. We can decide in each moment. Like me, I'm sure that you've all buried yourself on the inside in some ways along the way, maybe continue to do so now. We can stop doing that and just stop digging once we find ourselves in a hole. I think this practice strengthens us in so many different ways. There's a Zen proverb, only when you can be extremely pliable and soft can you be extremely hard and strong. The Buddha reminds us that the palm without wounds can hold poison safely, just as without a wound, poison does not penetrate. That which is unwholesome cannot penetrate those of mindfulness, those of mindful practice. So just to recap some of those strategies, some of those antidotes, we can abandon those unwholesome states that have arisen by bringing in those opposites. Greed, hatred, delusion, bring in generosity, compassion, cultivate more wisdom. In reflecting upon ourselves from a place of self-respect and all of those that are wise, that surround us, and looking at those that don't bring us our highest good and whether those are the ones that we should surround ourselves with. We can fine-tune our awareness in coming to us a fearless place and recognizing that we're only limited because we're conditioned to do so. Developing more moment-by-moment presence. The Buddha and saints and sages throughout the ages have pointed to many truths. We understand that the present moment cannot be caught in a vessel, nor can it be broken by a stone. It is ever-changing, ever new, for as soon as you grasp it, it has disappeared. So just that sense of urgency and being more present. There's only so many moments. More strategy is investigate with compassion and patience those qualities and attitudes of our relationships and all life. And undertaking a more dedicated practice of no harm, it keeps us aware of those poisons. Recognizing that sometimes consciously, oftentimes not, we show our truest beliefs about everything from compassion to betrayal through the quality of relationships that surround us. Another Zen proverb, I guess I was on a Zen quote kick. I'll just share it. Let go over a cliff, die completely, and then come back to life. After that, you cannot be deceived. And that's what this practice is. It's just coming back over and over again and doing our best to see clearly and be more mindful and not causing harm and trying to make a difference in the world. First with ourselves. So I hope that you all follow your bliss loved ones. Thank you for allowing me to share.